You're listening to the Fantasy Sports Radio Network.
Roto Experts in the Morning with your hosts, Mike Blewett and George Kurtz. Now, here's Mike and George.
Welcome. There's that sound. It's the sound of the start of another edition of the Roto Experts in the Morning. Thank you for joining us this morning on the Fantasy Sports Radio Network. Mike Blewett here with George Kurtz and our pal Matt Modica here for the next 2 hours from 8 to 10. Thanks for joining us today. Obviously a lot of baseball to get to. Hopefully you made the wise decision to pass on basketball last night in what I would deem the worst playoff basketball game in the history of the NBA, where the Celtics got annihilated by the Cleveland Cavaliers. It was 72-31 at halftime, and it probably wasn't that close. A 44-point win for the Cavs, so good for them, bad for the Celts. That has all the makings of a sweep, unless Cleveland just decides to take a night off. Back to baseball, which we're going to be talking about pretty heavily today, because a lot of action last night, obviously a lot of action through the weekend. But Chris Sale comes out, another dominant performance. So looking at my notes from last week, trying to update them to this week, and one of my notes was that Sale is dominant. He is again, Matt, and unfortunately he gets the no decision, but he comes up strong with 10 strikeouts. He ties his own major league record, which was tied along with Pedro Martinez, with 8 games in a row of 10-plus strikeouts. So unfortunately gets the no decision, but he has – I think 90 strikeouts on the season, 21 more than any other pitcher. Next, second place is Jacob DeGrom.
He's just been fantastic. He's striking out 39% of the batters he's facing. Some people were worried that he was going to Fenway, but I mean, the first pitch strike right now is at an all-time high for him, 68%. The swinging strike percentage is an all-time high at basically 16.5%. So, I mean, he really is just right now putting on a show for everyone.
George, another note on this game. In the ninth inning, Ryan Healy hits a bomb to deep center field. Jackie Bradley Jr. goes up and robs him of the walk-off homer and gets the third out of the inning. Healy was stunned. Bradley just kind of tipped his cap. A great play. I get really fired up when I see those kind of plays because we see all kinds of homers. We see a lot of different things in Major League Baseball. You don't often see a robbing of a walk-off homer, so a cool moment, despite the fact that they ended up walking it off in the 10th where Canna hits a home run in the 10th.
Yeah, they just delayed it an inning. That's all. Give the fans a little bonus Cantos there. But, hey, at least Bradley's doing something.
Yeah, that's a fair point. Jackie Bradley currently hitting 198. Not a ton of stats from this game because it was a well-pitched game. Kendall Graveman, George, puts up 6 innings, 2-run ball. He limits the Red Sox.
Yeah, I mean, going out to Oakland, one of the better pitchers ballparks there. I'm not going to trust Graveman. I think he's a matchup guy for me. I would not have started him versus Boston here, so I certainly didn't enjoy the start last night if I did own him in one league. But pitch well, good to see. There's some pitching depth that's out there, but it's matchup dependent.
All right, good stuff. That gets us off to a start. We'll start rolling along. We're going to talk about the Rangers. We're going to talk about why I still love Don Mattingly. I got a lot of content on that. It's Mike, Matt, and George. Back in a couple of minutes on the Fantasy Sports Radio Network. Welcome back to the Fantasy Sports Radio Network. Lots of good stuff to talk about today. A little jazzy music right there. Kind of like it. Talk about injuries later. I don't want to get the show off to a bad start because I'm feeling juiced today. Kind of like some of the action I saw last night at MLB. Didn't love what the Yankees did last night, obviously, but we'll get to that in a minute. One of the other big stories of the night was the Rangers. Nice outing there for the Rangers. 5-3 win over the Tigers. They're 7th in a row at Comerica. They have dominated the Tigers up there as of late. Nice outing from Nick Martinez, his first win since 2015. Daniel Norris, Kind of a rough, bumpy outing. Gives up a couple of homers, and that's really one of the things I wanted to talk about, because Joey Gallo hit the hardest home run off a left-handed pitcher in the StatCast era. His 13th home run of the year, Matt. Mike Napoli picks one up as well, but Joey Gallo is 13th homer of the year.
I mean, Gallo is giving you the power, but batting 188 is really, really tough to carry, and, you know, it's just... He has to get better at, you know, I don't see how you could really have him on your team. It's tough. I mean, the slugging.
Two more strikeouts too.
Yeah, he's either first or second in strikeout percentage. I believe he's atop the list right now. The problem with the Rangers is they've won 10 games, and I think they've only gained like a game or two in the standings on the Astros. So, I mean, unless the Rangers get some pitching, I really can't see them overtaking Houston this year.
Yeah, George, it's going to be tough. The Astros, to me, have really been the best team that I've seen play this year. They continue to play well, but the Rangers can get themselves in the mix, obviously, for a wild card spot. As Matt says, they might need to make some additions here. What are your thoughts, really, though, on Gallo? The 13 homers, but carrying a 188 average, as Matt says, it kind of destroys you everywhere else other than the power numbers.
Yeah, you can't have that. I mean, listen, you could have a team with three 320 hitters, in which case you're okay if you need the power that badly. But a 188, I mean, we worry about guys batting 220, 230 who do this. You're batting 50 points below that, you know, so it's going to kill your average here. Like, maybe your punting average, whatever you want to do, whatever you want to justify to yourself. But I would say on an overwhelming majority of teams, you just can't have that. And I don't know if that's going to change anytime soon. He may bat higher than 188, but this is never going to be. Even a 250 hitter, it's just not what he is. He's pretty much all or nothing right now, and he'd be killing me. I can't start him.
Matt, back to Daniel Norris for a second. Brad Ausmus had some comments after the game that he's saying he's just coming out too jacked up. He's very fired up. He's not controlling himself. As a starter, you have to kind of pace yourself. You can't come out trying to throw the ball through the screen every time you come out there for every pitch. He said he ended up losing control in the middle in one of the innings. He walked in a run. So Daniel Norris, currently carrying a 4.81 ERA. He's 2-3 on the season. He had 8 strikeouts last night, but he gives up to 2 homers. Walks killed him in that one inning. So what are your thoughts on Daniel Norris long-term?
I mean, long-term, this is an arm I like. I think at some point he will put it together. The walks are just way too high right now. He needs to go deeper into games. And the Tigers really need him. I don't know if it's going to happen anytime soon. Maybe it clicks again in the second half. Like I said, it's an arm I do like long term. He's still young. He battled cancer. So, you know, you got to give this kid some time. You know, it takes these guys, you know, not everybody, it doesn't click for everybody right away. We see that with Jose Berrios the other night. So, you know, it's an arm I do like, but, you know, it's not there yet. He hasn't become a finished product.
I listened to you guys yesterday. There was a lot of Jose Berrios talk yesterday. He got in some good time there.
Yeah,
Jose Berrios, or maybe it was Thursday.
You know, he's the
in any event.
He's taking over right now.
Yeah. To your point about Daniel Norris's stats, and George, I'll throw it over to you, 39 strikeouts but 21 walks. The whip is 1.7. The ERA, as I said, 4.1. Coming out there, giving you some innings every time out there, but really just not effective enough, George. I don't know that he's a guy that you can release depending on the size of your league, but your thoughts on Daniel Norris?
The kid has talent. I mean, he has talent. He's never been able to harvest it yet for whatever the reason might be. We've seen this before. Guys have good bullpens before the game. Come into the game, can't control the strike zone. The ball's all over the place. Either they're walking batters or even their control within the zone is not good. In other words, they're throwing strikes, but throwing it right down Broadway, and it's getting smacked all over the place. So he's got to learn to harness that. You know, whether that's going to be at the major league level, is he going to be sent down? The Tigers aren't an overwhelmingly deep farm system where they can afford to do that. They, I think Matt said it, they need him. They need him to pitch well if they want to compete here. They are competing for a wild card spot. They're in a tough spot, the Tigers. I mean, Miguel Cabrera's hurt again, oblique strain. I'm a little surprised they haven't put him on the DL again to get him healthy. Victor Martinez is away this weekend on paternity leave. So they're in a rough spot. I guess some good news is J.D. Martinez has come off the DL like a bat on fire as well as he's playing.
Right back to you, George. Matt Bush, since you're the closer report guy, Matt Bush, a really shaky ninth inning. He does hang on for the save, but it was tenuous there. He gave up a run, an unearned run, but he had runners on. Alex Avila strikes out to end the game. So Matt Bush, kind of shaky, but picks up his fifth save of the year.
He's fairly safe. I mean, yes, it wasn't the greatest outing, but not every closer is going to have a 1-2-3 and strike everybody out. We all go home happy outing. Got the save, so he was able to get out of it. He's been pretty solid since taking over the role. Hasn't gotten an abundance of saves. You know, it seems like the Rangers need to lose games or they don't have save opportunities, but he's done the job when called upon. I mean, on a scale of 1 to 10, a 10 being Mario Rivera and you're never going to lose the job, you have it forever, he's probably in the 5 to 6 range. You know, the Rangers have tried everybody else. They had Dyson. It's highly unlikely to ever get that job back. I think if Bush was the falter, it probably gives Jeffress another shot here. I still wonder if eventually the Rangers upgrade this position. But then again, you know, I thought they'd do that in the offseason as well. It's Bush's job to lose. And right now, I don't think he's all that close to losing it.
Moving on to another game, Matt, near and dear to your heart. You said the Mets currently are the only team in the majors sporting a 5 ERA. And I said, he tweeted that just before the show, and I said, well, there's nowhere to go but up. But the upside, and the guy that we talked about before the season, and I said this, and I think you guys were in agreement, that because of all the other circus-like stuff going on in New York, people end up not talking about him that much. We all acknowledge how great he is. I think everybody in the know in baseball understands how great Jacob DeGrom is. But he becomes a side story to all the other nonsense going on. Matt Harvey's been terrible, but we talk about him far more for obvious reasons than we do Jacob DeGrom, who just goes out last night. He's 3-1 on the season, 7 innings, 9 Ks, gives up no runs. He's a 3.5 ERA, so that could continue to come down. But Jacob DeGrom masterful last night in L.A. or at home against L.A.
You know, I mean, everything's pointing to DeGrom. I mean, if you look at the advanced metrics, he's got, 76 strikeouts in 55 innings, 32% K rate. I mean, command and control has been a little off, and he's gotten punished when, he's left some over. But, I mean, this is a guy that I think is going to finish the season really strong, be one of the best pitchers in MLB. I think he's definitely a top 10 and could possibly sneak into top 5.
Yeah, he was the guy I really wanted during drafts, and I just screwed up, whatever. I should have taken the shot and taken him around earlier than I thought I should have. But in any event, George, DeGrom seems to be the bright spot on the Mets right now. He stops, they had a horrendous losing streak, obviously, going. DeGrom steps in here with a big start.
I mean, hey, if you're a Mets fan, what are you watching right now? It's pretty much DeGrom and Conforto. That's about it. You know, Matt and Corey and I were playing a game yesterday about picking the All-Star team, the real-life All-Star team, not a fantasy All-Star team for Major League Baseball yesterday. And I had DeGrom easily as one of my top 5 starters in the National League. So I agree with Matt. I think he's one of the better starters in the league. I think it's good for him that we don't talk about him all that much. You know, you don't want to put him up there with Harvey and the mess he is, Noah Syndergaard and the sideshow he's become, and now the injury, you know, all the other garbage going on with New York. It's probably good for him that we don't talk about him all that much.
Yeah, you're probably right. It takes some heat off in what can otherwise be a pressure cooker of a city. And granted, you know, as bad as they've been, 17-23, and yeah, it's fading in the East, but they're not the worst team in baseball. So we'll see if they can get a couple of guys healthy and Addison Reed can hang in there, then they might be a little bit better here in the next few months. So I understand the frustration, Matt, for you, but you have to try to at least – before it's even Memorial Day, you have to try to look at some positives beyond DeGrom, and maybe he's the leader of the team moving forward.
It's possible that he can be the leader of the team, but it's hard for a starting pitcher to do that. I think you do want an everyday player to step up like that, but the Mets may not have that personality. There's no Dave, you know, David Wright on the DL. Reyes is not quite ready. He's never going to be that player again. You do sort of need that personality to step up and lead. And DeGrom may not be that kind of person. He's still maybe a little bit of a background guy.
True. Well, I'm glad I got Conforto. Hit another homer last night, 11th on the season. We'll come back. We'll talk about John Mattingly on the Fantasy Sports Radio Network. back on the Fantasy Sports Radio Network. Mike Blewett, Matt Modica, George Kurtz here until 10. And then Fantasy Bagels and Baseball with Tony Cicada, Cha-Cha. Then we got the Weekend Fantasy Update. That's Joe Galina, Frank Stampfl, and Mike Florio. And you can listen to all of that on the Premier 24/7 World Premier Fantasy Sports Radio Network. Take it with you wherever you go. Download the FNTSY Sports Radio app in the iTunes Store on Google Play. Listen for free anytime, anywhere. You can hear us here every morning, this weekend morning, from on Saturdays and Sundays. You can hear Tony Cicada on the treadmill, Benny Riccardi in the car, or Greg Sussman on the subway, or just relax with the king on the couch, or Jake Seeley when you're jogging. Keep you updated, informed wherever you go. Get the FNTSY Sports Radio app for free right now in the iTunes Store on Google Play, and take the experts with you. Just search FNTSY in one of those and download the app. Listen, download for free, listen for free. So my John Mattingly segment, and it's already received negative attention on Twitter, so this is not off to a scorching start. But I love Don Mattingly. Because of the age I am, and George, you're probably in the same boat, and Matt, you're probably tired of hearing about it, but tough. I love Don Mattingly because I grew up watching him, and even though he wasn't on any good Yankee teams until his last season, or any playoff teams until his last season, I love Don Mattingly. He was winning MVPs. He was the best hitter in baseball for a stretch there in the 80s, and I loved him. I had posters of Don Mattingly on my wall. I've later met the guy. He's a great person. I've seen him interact with fans. I see him to be just a stand-up dude. Well, last night, it just reaffirms why I like Don Mattingly. He's still so fired up about baseball. To those that didn't see, the Dodgers picked up a 7-2 win last night over the Marlins. There was a bench clearing situation. Brett Eibner had hit a home run in the fourth inning and then was drilled in the ribs by A.J. Ramos right after Cody Bellinger slugged the third home run of the night for the Dodgers to extend their lead. We'll get to Cody Bellinger's start in a minute. But the Dodgers went up 7-0. Carlos Torres, home run umpire, immediately ejected Ross Stripling when he retaliated by the Dodgers' Ross Stripling when he retaliated by hitting by throwing a ball behind Giancarlo Stanton. So first, Matt, did you think that it was a deserved ejection because there was no warning given to the Dodgers before the ejection?
First off, I really don't like the warnings in baseball. I think it handcuffs teams. And for somebody swinging at a 3-0 pitch, if that was the reasoning, I don't know the whole story, but that's what I've kind of heard. I find that to be bogus. I mean, they scored two runs in the top of the ninth. I mean, your team can come back. So, I mean, if it was like 12-0, you know, maybe you want to say that. But, I mean, look, these guys are up there. They want to hit two. So, I don't know. I mean, I think it was kind of out of hand. And it was kind of ridiculous, the whole thing, how it escalated. But I will say one thing about Mattingly. He probably is my favorite Yankee of all time as a Mets fan.
Yeah, and to bring up the Mattingly part, George, so what was great about it is that so the bench is clear after Stanton gets thrown at, even though they missed him, he gets thrown at, and Mattingly is going nuts. He gets ejected, obviously, as he's going toe-to-toe with Bob Guerin, his former teammate. They played with the Yankees in the 80s together. Bob Guerin was a backup catcher to Don Slott and some others, but they played together. And Mattingly looked like he wanted to kill him. D. Gordon is the one that tried to broker some sort of peace or get Mattingly to not get thrown out. Didn't work. So Mattingly was funny because he's like, we didn't do it on purpose. But if we're counting up, they're also up 5-0 swinging at 3-0 pitches. And if you're going to swing 3-0 when we've got six outs left, they've got their guy out in the bullpen. They can say it however they want, but when you swing 3-0, up 5-0, going into the eighth, you can put it however you want. So Mattingly was basically saying, we didn't do it on purpose, but if we did, this is the reason why.
All right, there are so many things that are screwed up about this. First thing, it's ironic that D. Gordon was trying to break it up. He was hit earlier in the game by Alex Wood as well, which sort of no one remembers there. Honestly, I'm on Matt's side. There's no such thing as a warning in the rule book, by the way. That's a courtesy. That's not something you have to give. The rule stays. You throw at somebody, you're out of the game. You get ejected. So the umpires, I think, handled it correctly. Sort of what they didn't do earlier in the week when I thought they should have in other games as well. You know, you think about the Chris Sale situation early against Machado. Why wasn't he thrown out? We all knew he was throwing at him. You know, so we see that multiple times. Matter of fact, I was talking about it with Matt and Corey yesterday, complaining how baseball handles these things with the Jose Bautista situation. Why wasn't Turan thrown out? We all knew he was throwing at him, but it's okay in that situation. So baseball is, you know, sometimes we follow the old unwritten rules, sometimes we don't. You know, the Mattingly, what he's so mad about, how you don't swing at a 3-0 pitch, you don't try and steal a base if you're up a certain amount of runs, you don't try and bunt if you're up a certain amount of runs. You know, I think that's ridiculous. As soon as I see the other team wave the white flag, fine. Then I won't swing at a 3-0 pitch. Then I won't try and bunt for a base hit. I won't steal any bases. Until then, we see plenty of comebacks where teams come back from. Did the Yankees come back from a 9-run deficit earlier this season? And we've seen this a handful of other times. As you mentioned, these stats are so important to these players now. It's how they get paid that everyone's looking at. It doesn't bother me. It bothers you, get them out. Don't groove a 3-0 pitch. Don't get behind 3-0. You know, if the game's out of hand, the game's over, then throw balls right down the middle. Let's get some outs here and get out of here. So I actually have no problem with it. It's one of the old-time rules I don't like. Now, granted, if I'm a player, I'm probably obeying them because, as I like to say, if I got the game won already, I'm not doing anything that's going to get me drilled by a 95-mile-per-hour fastball. I'm just not going to do it. But I think in this case, and I'm as big a Don Mattingly fan as you, Mike. Coincidentally, I am wearing a Don Mattingly jersey right now.
Atta boy.
I was wearing it before the game.
Flying the colors.
Right. I'm wearing it, and I love Mattingly. He was my favorite player in the 80s, too. You know, watching him hit all those home runs in the consecutive games, all the grand slams that one season, I was at several of them. But I think he's wrong in this situation.
And he was asked, do you think there would be any carryover into Saturday's game? Who knows, he says. You never know what happens. It should be something that's over. I don't see it really carrying over or there being any reason. They got hit. They throw a ball behind Stanton. They swing 3-0. Whatever they do, whatever happens at that point, just move on. Which basically means we'll see what happens.
Watch tonight.
He didn't put it to bed. He just, look, he was in the middle of the scrum. He was really upset about it. I get it. You know, hitting Brett Eibner and hitting Giancarlo Stanton, I think it's fair to say there's a wide chasm in there in the level of the player. So I don't necessarily – I understand why the Marlins would be upset. Yeah, so I would understand why the Marlins are upset. But I don't that, – so that's the lead of the game. I don't think I buried the lead. But Cody Bellinger, Matt, guy hit another home run. Eight homers on the season. He's hitting .291. Continues to produce.
I think he's the fastest Dodger to hit 8 home runs. I mean, this kid's got the power. Obviously, we see it. I mean, I saw it in the Arizona Fall League. He never gets cheated from a swing. I did spend like $600 on him in one of my leagues, so I was happy to get him. And, you know, he's going to play. I mean, so he's entrenched in that lineup now. I mean, unless he has, like, a Michael Conforto-esque slump like last season, he's not going anywhere. He's one of their better hitters, too. So, I mean, for the Dodgers, it's pretty much the thing that I'm pissed is Chris Taylor is a guy that's going to get a lot of playing time now. And I could have got him last Sunday night for, like, $5 or even less. And I had the bid in, I took it out, and now he's going to get a lot of playing time.
is that due to – why do you say that specifically?
Well, Justin Turner went to the DL. So I know that what's-his-name's coming back off Logan Forsythe. He's going to play third base upon his return. And I would assume Chris Taylor is going to get most of the at-bats at second. I'm sure Utley might get a couple. But I think Utley will play some first with Adrian Gonzalez. He's back now, too. But
it should be noted that Yasiel Puig came out of the game last night, too.
Yeah, Puig's, you know, I'm not the biggest Puig guy. He just seems like always
just talking about.
He hurt himself on a walk.
Yes, he did. That is absolutely
how does that
right.
happen?
I don't know. I never heard of it before. His back tightened up during a fourth inning walk. I was actually going to save that for the next segment, but I read that this morning. I was like, that is the oddest thing I've ever heard. Apparently, he... I don't know, tweak something when he was not swinging. So he was replaced in the outfield. He actually stayed in the game temporarily, scored on Brett Eibner's home run, which was the sort of the beginning of the entire fracas last night. And then he was replaced in the outfield when Ebner moved from center field to right field, and Jock Peterson. They moved a bunch of guys around. Bottom line, George is right. He got hurt on a walk. So I don't know how to explain that, but it happened. So one other game real quick to go over. Brewers, Cubs yesterday. Cubs drop another one, 6-3. Get the box score up here. Not really too much to review there on the Cubs side. Didn't get much pitching. Butler, Montgomery in there for a few innings each. Espino on the Milwaukee side. So the decisions really go to the relievers. Peralta gets the win. He moves to 5-2. Bandy, 2-for-3, 2 RBIs, 2 walks. Not too much going on there, but Anthony Rizzo has another hit and a run scored. Ian Happ has a hit and a run scored. So not too much coming out of that game all the way around. I don't know if you have anything noteworthy out of that game, either you guys, Milwaukee and Chicago.
For me, it's Mike Montgomery.
Anybody, did you watch that game at all?
No, thankfully.
I don't know. It's 90 degrees here, right? We're all dying. It looked like it was about 20 degrees in Chicago. The players were all wearing those hoods over their heads and the skin tight stuff. I mean, it's raining and it's miserable. The umpires probably should have called the game earlier than they did. What a miserable day to play baseball in Chicago.
Yeah, it's a tough one. So, well, it's cooled off here in New York, but we'll keep it hot on the radio. You like that? So we'll be back on the Fantasy Sports Radio Network. We'll talk about injuries, unfortunately. But we've got to keep you posted, keep you updated, see who's out of the lineup, see who's coming back in. Back in a minute on the Fantasy Sports Radio Network. Back on the Fantasy Sports Radio Network. We are the Roto Experts in the Morning. It's Mike Blewett, George Kurtz, and Matt Modica. Hit us up on Twitter at FNTSY Radio. I'm at Mike Blewett. George is at George Kurtz. And Matt is at CTM Baseball. And you can go to therotoexperts.com. Exclusive Edge in-season fantasy baseball package. It's your ultimate bench coach for the 2017 season. So stay ahead of the pack with our in-depth statistical breakdowns, trend analysis, player insights. Head to the waiver wire, become a wizard, and how to scan the numbers like a roto scientist. We'll help you set the ideal lineups. This season, you get a built-in fantasy training staff with our new injury advisor powered by InsideInjuries.com. Get the Roto Experts exclusive Edge in-season fantasy baseball package now. Enter promo code FREERADIO at checkout for a special discount. You got George's closer report in there, George's who's hot, who's not in there. We're going to talk about the closer report in the next hour. One thing I did forget to mention on the Dodgers game, Matt, because you guys were talking about him so much the other day, along with Jose Berrios, is Alex Wood. Mm-hmm. Amidst the whole fracas last night, he threw 7 1/3 innings last night. He's 5-0 with a 1.88, and he's 4-0 with a 1.23 in his last 5 starts, a streak of 20 1/3 consecutive scoreless innings. He only had 4 Ks, but he had 4 double plays behind him. So real quick on Alex Wood before we get the injury update.
I mean, Alex Wood is the real deal. He's a guy that my only concern is, can he stay healthy? He is, in my opinion, entrenched in the Dodgers rotation right now. I mean, after Clayton Kershaw, I think he's their second best pitcher. And I think it's going to be him, Maeda, Urias, and who's going to get that fifth spot would be the question. Is Brandon McCarthy or Ryu going to win that fifth spot?
George, your thoughts there? You agree with Matt? I mean, there's obviously no way that Wood can come out of the rotation at this point. But who do you think will get that fifth slot?
Yeah, I do agree with Matt. I mean, like I said, you can't take him out right now. He's pitching too well, right? And that's always the number one key thing: how well you pitching, the hot guy, whatever it might be. They do have a lot of options. All right, they're both on the roster, and let's face it, if they want to go out and get somebody, they can do that as well come the trade deadline time. So there are other options there. But Kershaw is the definite, right? Then you got Hill, Maeda, Wood, McCarthy, Ryu, Urias. You know, I think Urias is in for the long haul as well. So I don't think you're going to see him. I think Wood right now is your number 3. You know, Hill will be number 4, assuming he can last, and with this blister problem he has. McCarthy, Ryu, those are my 2 shaky guys. Even Maeda, I don't think he's locked in either. The other question would be this: if they're not starting, what do you do with these guys? Can they come out of the bullpen? Some guys can, some guys can't. So it could be a rotating situation all year long, but I think Wood's locked in, yes.
Well, real quick on Wood, just to some eye-popping stats. I mean, basically, he has that 30% strikeout percentage, but a 67.5% ground ball percentage and a 20% hard hit. That's pretty pretty damn good.
Yeah, on fire right now. Pitching, I mean, he's pitching as well as anybody in the entire league. So, good on Alex Wood. So, turn the page over to some injury updates. We talked about Yasiel Puig. He got hurt on a walk. Yes, got hurt on a walk last night. Had to come out of the game, so we'll just track it today and tomorrow, see if he has any extended time or if he needs a couple of days rest. David Price, he did a rehab start last night, only pitched two innings because he had an escalated pitch count. So he's back. He's they're expecting him to throw 85 to 90 pitches. Didn't quite happen. They don't have the pitch speeds available because the radar gun at Coca-Cola Field wasn't functioning. So nice job, Sox, there. Making sure all your I's are dotted and your T's are crossed, the most valuable asset in the entire organization from a monetary perspective. They couldn't track his speeds last night. So, in any event, David Price made a rehab start. Chris Iannetta was somebody we talked about last week, just to update. He's coming back off the 7-day concussion DL. I know he's not the most fantasy-worthy guy out there, but we talked about him last week because it was a pretty horrific injury where he got hit in the face with a fastball. He broke a bunch of teeth. It's not clear that he had a concussion, but they put him on there. 7-day DL. Looks like he's coming off at some point this weekend. Marcus Semien, he underwent a procedure to repair a fracture of the scaphoid bone, to wrist bone, on April 18th. They're saying that he's had immense healing. I've never read that before in my life. Immense healing in the amount of time since he's had the surgery. He's cast free and eligible to return from the DL on June 14th. So, George, Marcus Semien, you know, he's a guy that obviously displayed a lot of power, but early this season he was off to a slow start and obviously has the wrist injury. But any expectations for him when he comes back off the DL on June 14th sounds kind of aggressive, but it's still a few weeks away.
Immense healing means he's healing quickly, which is good to hear. I mean, it's only 3 weeks, so it's not terribly long here. Maybe he comes back a little earlier than that. I would think it's saying you're getting power and you're going to you know, your average is going to suffer a little bit. But with all the injuries right now, aren't we happy when anyone's coming back? I mean, really, it's horrendous right now. This is turning very quickly, and it has been for a while, into a league where whichever team stays healthiest wins. Yeah, it's just too many guys Robbie on the Cano deal right week. Now. It's not enough guys that place. Yeah, Cano. And teams are doing the smart – I don't blame teams at all. They're doing the smart thing. Why let these injuries fester? You know, make these guys
but the Cano thing,
healthy for the long term.
The Cano thing was lingering before they put him on the DL, right?
Well, he
they let
play
it go
the next
too long.
Day.
I think.
Say that again, Matt.
He did play the next day. He injured it on on a Tuesday. He played that Wednesday, and then he sat out for like 4 days before they put him on the DL.
Yeah.
So.
I guess so. If they retroactive him, it's really not a mistake in that sense, but maybe he shouldn't have played that extra day. So in any event, Jeremy Hellickson, George, he appeared to tweak his right side, fouling off a pitch early in the seventh inning last night, then laced a double down the left field line, increased the Phillies' lead to 4-2, but he pulled up and grabbed his side on that hit as he reached second base. So he left the game immediately. He had allowed only two hits and two runs, one walk, and struck out two. So he was actually having a good outing. He actually gets the RBI there. But Jeremy Hellickson, I think you obviously, based on how well he's pitched, you have to be concerned because he's been a good asset for some fantasy teams here.
He has, but doesn't strike out enough batters. With Philadelphia, you're always going to wonder about that blow-up within that ballpark, the band box there. Philly's also doesn't have the greatest offense, so wins can be tough to come by as well. And this is for all Philadelphia pitchers, really. That's my problem with them. You're worried about each one of them. Not the greatest team, still rebuilding there. So I'm going to be worried about having those guys start. Really, their matchup plays for me. I need the strikeouts. I need to have a chance to get a win here. I need to worry about my ratio. So I'm not in love with any of the Philly starters. Hellickson, for me, you got to think a DL stick could be around the corner for him as well, especially for a pitcher. If you're going to miss one start, you might as well get on the DL.
Well, the
Matt, this looks like all the starts of it. This looks like it's got DL written all over it.
Yeah, and you know what? If you own Hellickson, be grateful for what you've gotten to this point. I mean, everything.
Totally agree.
Everything's pointing that, you know, he should be pitching above a 5 ERA. The guy's got a 3.5 K per nine. I don't even know how the hell you survive. You know, that's just insane. I mean, the control is there, yes, but, I mean, that's you're missing pretty much no bats.
Yeah, only 9 walks through basically 50 innings. His whip is right around 1, ERA under 3.5. He's got 5 wins. So I'm with you. There's a lot of metrics that point to the fact that he's not that good. At least those numbers don't bear out him being that good. But be grateful for what you've gotten. It is unfortunate because he actually was pitching well again last night before he has to come out of the game. So keep an eye on Jeremy Hellickson. I would expect a DL stint, but maybe we're wrong. We'll see. Mitch Haniger. My guy that I did not cut, he's been using up my DL slot. After initially hoping to send him out to start a minor league stint with Class A Modesto on Friday, the Mariners backed off that plan. We'll keep the standout rookie in Seattle for now to continue rehabbing the strained oblique in his right side that sidelined him for the past 3.5 weeks. He went through a hard workout on Thursday, felt some soreness, and the club doesn't want to push him too fast. So the original hope that he was play these several games near his home in California and then join the Mariners for their 8-game road trip on Tuesday. So that plan is on hold. That is bad news, George.
Listen, oblique injuries are tough, right? Because in my mind, it's sort of like the groin. You don't know how healthy you are until you actually play in a real game. You can practice all you want until you have that adrenaline flowing, take those real hard swings, those real cuts. You don't know how healthy it is. That's why with Miguel Cabrera, what the Tigers did, I think was sort of silly. He came back immediately from the first oblique after the DL stint, and now he's hurt again. Generally, this takes weeks to heal, up to a month sometimes. It's going to take 6 weeks, not days. So I think teams need to realize that. Get these guys healthy for the long run, not hope they come back in the short run.
Another update, Trevor Story went on the 10-day DL on May 11th. It looks like he began his rehab, AAA Albuquerque, on Friday. Will not have any restrictions on innings or at-bats. So this is a straight-up couple of rehab starts, get back to the majors as quickly as possible. Also with the Rockies outfielder David Dahl in the DL since the start of the season, was going to take batting practice yesterday, and that was nixed by the weather. So keep an eye on that. But Trevor Story, look, he's been miserable, Matt, to start the season despite the 6 homers. Any expectations when he comes back? Do you think this DL stint is what he needed?
Maybe. I mean, I don't think it can get any worse for Trevor Story. He was him and like Joey Gallo were fighting for the top spot among strikeout percentage prior to going on the DL.
It was 37.5% before he went on the DL.
I believe he homered in his rehab game last night. So if you want to take some look, the power's there, and the you know as long as he'll be aided by Coors Field, that will help him. He'll hit home runs. I mean, I don't know what the average is going to be, but as long as he's healthy, the home runs will. You know, this is a guy that should hit at least another 20 home runs.
Yeah, George, real quick, Corey Kluber throwing 35 pitches today at Progressive Field. Hopefully get him back here at some point soon. Any expectations?
He's going to be in my lineup as soon as he comes back, so I do have high expectations for Kluber.
All right. We'll see. Talk about a little bit more of this after the break. Welcome back to the Roto Experts in the Morning. Quick segment right here. Last injury update. Ian Kennedy expected to be activated from the disabled list. Didn't get off to a good start this year, but Ian Kennedy might be a depth pitching guy there for some people. Real quick on the Yankees, because I wanted to get to a conversation that a friend of mine brought up, George, and I think you're going to like it. But in any event, the Yankees blow the game against the Rays last night. They lose 5-4. Rough outing for the bullpen. Tyler Clippard, despite striking out the side, gave up a couple of walks and a big hit to Evan Longoria, who won the game basically in the bottom of the 8th. Colome with his 11th save of the year. I heard you guys talking about him the other day on the radio, Matt. He's putting up some stats. Alex Colome may not be everybody's favorite closer, but 11 saves at this point in the season. He's returned his value for you.
No, he's really good. Building off of last season, he's got to be a guy on the Nationals' wish list. I mean, him, Herrera. I think, and personally, I think the Nationals need to get two relievers, say a closer and a high-end setup guy or something like that. Of course, that's the formula to winning the playoffs now. I think the Indians showed it. The Royals showed it in the past with the 7th, 8th, and 9th guy, but Terry Francona's usage of Andrew Miller in the 5th or 6th when the game was on the line and still having that guy to lock it down in the 9th.
George, on the Yankees hitting side, I mean, what's, you know, they lose the game last night. I'm not going to freak out about one loss, but it really is amazing when you look up and down the lineup. Gardner hitting .286. Ellsbury's average is up to .287. Matt Holliday with a homer last night at .273. Castro we know about. Judge we know about. Gregorius hitting over .300. Chris Carter, hello, .213. And Austin Romine and Torres were in there last night. But it is kind of crazy that these guys continue to produce. I know people are sort of like, well, how can we move Brett Gardner and maybe get some pitching? I hear these types of discussions. Brett Gardner's most value is here in New York. You're not going to really flip him for anything. And while he's hitting .286, just use him to the best of his ability, yes?
I mean, listen, I would flip Gardner as well if he gets some pitching. The Yankees' obvious need is pitching. They do have some problems there, so they need it. And they have an abundance of outfielders. You know, they have guys in the minor leagues who are going to be ready to call up shortly. And guys like Clint Frazier, something they believe could play this year. Fowler is also there who could play this season. So they do have an abundance of outfielders there. That being said, you don't just flip them for anything. You flip them for whatever you can get. Last night was an interesting Yankee game. Girardi didn't manage. He was at his child's graduation, so Robbie Thompson managed. And how Thompson managed the ninth inning, like he wanted to get out of there. He didn't want to win. I mean, he let Chris Carter hit for himself when you had Hicks on the bench. And you knew Carter was going to strike out. That's all he does. And then he let Romine hit for himself and didn't hit Gary Sanchez above him. What's going on here? How does Gary Sanchez not hit in that situation? Do you not know your roster? Was something going on? Was Sanchez hurt that we don't know about? So it's very strange how Robbie Thompson handled that ninth inning. Maybe he just wants to make sure he's not going to be asked to manage in the future.
I think George made a really good point on Twitter. I'm looking at my Twitter feed, and it says what I missed. And George last night said that the Chapman injury really came into effect last night by having
totally agree.
You know, having what's his name in the eighth, and that does hurt them there too.
This is exactly what I was going to bring up. We'll save it for the top of the hour, but really the question being, clearly they could use somebody like Miller last night, a really solid eighth inning guy. Tyler Clippard in this instance was not that guy. So, George, for a hot take discussion, in hindsight, did the Yankees make a mistake by ditching Andrew Miller?
Well, you'll find out when you, depending on how good Clint Frazier is or what he brings back.
Damn
in the
right,
deal,
they will.
He could be dealt for pitching. Or Justice Sheffield, another player they got there who could be a number two starter for them. No, I don't think they made a mistake in trading Miller.
All right. Well, Matt, I'm going to give you a chance to talk about it at the top of the hour because a friend of mine hit me up at this discussion and I was like laughing about it. Ultimately, I think they made the right decision. You have to judge the trade for what you got at the time. But we'll talk about it a little bit more after the break. It's Mike, Matt, and George, 1 hour down, 1 hour to go on the Roto Experts in the Morning.
You're listening to the Fantasy Sports Radio Network.
Roto Experts in the Morning with your hosts, Mike Blewett and George Kurtz. Now, here's Mike and George.
Mike and George are back on the Roto Extra this morning, but we're also here with Matt Mojica. It's the Fantasy Sports Radio Network, hour number two of this show. And you'll hear Tony Cicada and Cha-Cha with Fantasy Bagels and Baseball after this, and then Weekend Fantasy Update with Joe Galina, Frank Stample, and Mike Florio. So, Matt, we talked about it a little bit before we went out for the break, but the Andrew Miller thing did rear its head last night. A buddy of mine was crowing about this a couple of days ago, and literally last night is when it reared its ugly head. Tyler Clippard couldn't get it shut down last night, and Adam Warren obviously didn't really pitch well. He gave up 3 runs. So the bullpen kind of unraveled on the Yankees last night, which hasn't been a significant issue to this point, but as George said, the Aroldis Chapman injury has really changed things and changed the dynamic in that bullpen with Betances moving to the closer role. So That trade last year, they got four guys for Andrew Miller, Clint Frazier, and Justice Sheffield, the two high-profile prospects of that trade. But now here they are. They're a team that's, we think, playing above their heads, but at this stage, they hit better than every team in baseball. So if Andrew Miller was around, do you think the Yankees would have a legitimate shot at challenging this year for a title?
If Andrew Miller was around, yes, I do think they would. I still think the Yanks do have a shot here. I like this team as much. I mean, I'm a Mets fan, but I am really liking this Yankees team. At the time of the trade, it was the right move to make. If the Yankees would have known how good they'd be right now, in hindsight, I mean, maybe they still make it due to the package that they got. But I think the Yankees need to get either Gerrit Cole, Jose Quintana, somebody. I think if they get that established arm in that rotation right now, this is a team that can really has a chance at winning this division, especially with the uncertainty of David Price coming back. And you know, if they had Miller, you know, this is a guy that can pitch more than one inning and, you know, is really a lockdown guy. So in the long run, it's probably going to work out to be the right move due to the talent they received in return. But I think this Yankee team needs to be aggressive. The Yankees, I understand, coming into the season, it was all about being in rebuild mode. That's over. This is too good of a team right now. You have too good. The hitters are there. So I think the Yankees are going to go out and buy some pitching.
George, hindsight is a lovely thing to have, but you just kind of judge the trade based on the value you're getting at the time. Do you think the Yankees are, I mean, do you think do you agree with Matt? Do you think that it's over? Rebuild is over. They have to be aggressive. Maybe flip some of these prospects into a legitimate starter to bolster that rotation.
Okay. First off, when I made that comment on Twitter last night about Chapman, I meant the Chapman injury. This had nothing to do with Andrew Miller. Andrew Miller, that's history. That's last year. That was a great trade. No one's thinking that was a bad deal. Yankees got way too much talent back in return for a guy who's going to throw 100 innings at most. So I'm not worried about Andrew Miller at all. Do I think the Yankees need to be aggressive? Yes, because they cannot compete for anything with this pitching staff. It's gonna get worse, not better, as the season goes along.
Okay, back in 2 minutes on the Fantasy Sports Radio Network, Roto Experts in the Morning. Back to the Roto Experts in the Morning, talking about hindsight and the hindsight of the Andrew Miller trade. Obviously, the Yankees would like to have him now based on what happened last night. But I'm not looking in the past. It's all about the future with these Yankees. Matt and George saying they need to be aggressive. I guess, you know, I've been hesitant to say that they should move some of these prospects. But the more they play like this and hit like this, the less I have to stand on with my argument. I just have wanted them to be patient for so many years that finally they're in a position where I guess maybe they should be aggressive. And in some ways I was thinking about it, and the irony is that Andrew Miller was on this team too. But when the Red Sox made a bunch of moves going into the 2013 season, they were a good team. But I don't think anybody thought necessarily that those moves for Jared Saltalamacchia or Mike Napoli and Karp and a few other guys were going to be the moves that made them a championship team. And I still look back at that team, and I'm sort of perplexed that they won because they got so hot in the playoffs. But that team won 97 games. And, yes, there was about a half a dozen mid-range free agent moves that all worked out. But it was about the Sox being aggressive at a time when they had kind of blown up the previous regime, right? So maybe the Yankees need to follow that playbook and say, hey, listen, when things are working out, you need to be aggressive at the time and make a couple of moves, even if it's not a blockbuster move like that. Does that kind of make sense? Is it my logic washing out, Matt?
Well, the way I'm looking at it right now for the Yankees, the one guy I wouldn't trade is Torres. But I think the other guys, I would make the move for, say you got Jose Quintana, who I think you have for at least the next couple of seasons, at a really good contract, number one. if you want to look at it that way, too, and you have control over him. Or even a Garrett Cole, where you have him this year and next year. So you're not getting guys on rentals. That's the other key part. You have a chance to make the playoffs this season and build on it next season. So, I mean, some of these guys that maybe they acquired in the last year or so, or other guys that are in their system, they're really not deep in pitching, so in the minor leagues, and their top guy is just had Tommy John. So I would be aggressive in that aspect. Take some of the talent I acquired last year or some talent I had that I drafted, and you know, keep the Torres kid, but you know, try and get a package. I mean, I don't see it's the Yankee way. If you got a team, whether you're surprised, I mean, just think about if Greg Bird comes back at some point this season and starts hitting. You got Gary Sanchez. You got Judge. Aaron Hicks is, I think he's arrived now. He's a guy that, you know, is, you know, he's just been a blessing for the Yankees this season. Sterling Castro doesn't get the credit he deserves. Gregorius, a solid fielder, hitter. You know, so this is a good team.
George, to Matt's point, since they don't have any pitching in the minors anyway, and their top guy in Caprelli and being out with Tommy John surgery, they're going to have to move some of their prospects anyway to get arms. So why not just do it now with a guy like a Quintana or Cole that they have some control over?
See, what you have to look at is like this. There's two things. First off, the Yankees have way too much talent in the minors. And what I mean is not all those players are going to play for you. You don't have enough room. You already said you got Judge. You got Ellsbury locked up, whether it sucks or not. You have Ellsbury locked up forever. I agree with Matt about
287.
Him. He looks like he's the real deal. Yeah, well, he's not worth the $160 million he's getting. But he's locked up forever, so he's in there. You know, you have Gardner for this year and next. So you have more players than you need. And this doesn't even count the Clint Frazier, the guy like Blake Rutherford, Dustin Fowler. These are all guys that are going to be ready to play in New York within a year or two. So you're going to have too many outfielders here. The other thing is, not all these prospects the Yankees have, Frazier, Torres, Rutherford, Fowler, Chance Adams, Jorge Mateo, Justus Sheffield, Caprelli, Miguel Andujar, Dylan Tate, I mean, it goes on and on and on, are going to end up being good major leaguers. Some of these guys are going to bust. So maybe, you know, you want to move these guys for a more proven talent. So, yeah, I do agree with Matt. Yeah, whether it's Quintana, who you have, is a good, I wouldn't say he's a great pitcher, but a good pitcher, but you have control of him for a few years, left-hander in Yankee Stadium would be nice, too. Or, you know, maybe Cole is someone I've been bringing up as well. I think the Pirates do want to move him because they know he's not staying there. So that you still got your team would have control of him for a year and a half. You know, I think he's be interesting to the Yankees too. My only problem with Cole is I don't know if the Yankees and Pirates match up well, as the Yankees' plethora seems to be in the outfield. And Pittsburgh's pretty much stocked there too. Jorge Mateo, the blooms off that rose a little bit, might be tough to move him. Gleyber Torres isn't going anywhere. That's the one Yankee prospect I can almost guarantee you will stay in New York. But yeah, I think the Yankees should think about it. And here's another thing to think about if you're a Yankee fan, about how the future's even brighter. Sabathia's contract, A-Rod's contract, you know, a couple other one-year deals are all off the books this year. The Yankees have $75 million.
Yeah,
coming off the books next season. If you don't think Machado or Harper is a Yankee in 2019, you're out of your mind.
Yeah, they're gonna go after one of them. George, you seem to be you've always seemed to lean towards Machado more than Harper, but
for need, they don't have a third baseman in the minor leagues. You know, the outfield they have. I just mentioned all the outfields they have that in abundance, but unless you truly believe in Miguel Andujar, you know, as being a top flight third baseman, and I really don't. They don't have that. And so Machado makes sense as far as that's concerned. Listen, if Harper wants to come here and he's, as silly as this sounds, if he'll take $300 million from you instead of $400 million from somebody else, you're going to have to consider it. The kid will be 26 years old when he's a free agent. He'll hit 9,000 home runs in Yankee Stadium. So I would understand it. But that's another reason why, once again, you could think about trading some of these guys. Because if you're going to bring in a free agent as well, where are all these guys going to play?
Yeah, I think the Yankees can get both of those guys. The one thing is, being that Harper, he's from Vegas, right? So, I mean, the Dodgers have the money as well. So if he wanted to play on the West Coast and he'd still be with a storied franchise, I could see it that way. I mean, I don't see him getting anything less than $400 to $500 million in like a 10-year deal, something like that.
Half a billion.
I've always wondered whether or not Harper would be the type of guy that would want to come to New York. If I had heard stories about him being a lifelong Yankees fan and wanting to play in New York, I'd probably think of it a little bit more. I just wonder if he's the type of person that's going to want to come here, or if he's going to go West Coast or any of that kind of stuff. Machado, you know, I think he comes right. I mean, Machado's not even hitting well right now. He's got some power numbers, but he's not even hitting well right now. But forget that. I mean, nobody's worried about Manny Machado long term. Ultimately, yeah, you're right. They could clear some space. George, you don't want to clear out the outfielders and then not get Harper. That would be the problem. So clearly one hand washes the other as part of that plan. It's a little difficult to predict this far out. But, you know, I'm starting to come around. I've been kind of waiting, and I'm not being a pessimistic Yankees fan. I just didn't really expect this team to be hit this well. I've been waiting for the other shoe to drop. You know, there's still 4 months of the season left to go. They're not necessarily going to lead the AL in all these hitting categories for the remainder of the season. But since they are close, since they are in first place as we approach Memorial Day, it's making more and more sense to me to flip somebody. And I think Matt's point is really what I've been starting to get convinced of. Since there isn't all this talent of pitching in the minors that's coming up, they're going to, as George said, not be able to play everybody, have to flip some of these guys anyway. A, because there's not a 100% success rate. B, because the outfield will be too full. And C, because they don't have enough pitching. So they're going to have to go out and get it one way or the other. You know, you don't have guys on the free agent market all that often that are lockdown starters. You know, like if they went out and signed, for example, Jake Arrieta, say he pitches well the remainder of the year, and Jake Arrieta's a guy that go out and get. Exactly right. You're saying God no, and I would say the same thing. He's a guy in his approaching his mid-30s. You're going to give him a bunch of money. He doesn't fix the problems. What helps, what you obviously want, is guys under control that are a bit younger that you can get more years out of. And if that doesn't work out after you make the trade, so be it. That's the ultimate point of all of this. You have to judge the trade based on what you get at the time, right? If Gerrit Cole crashes and burns after they make the trade and they flipped, I don't know, Clint Frazier, what are you going to do? Like, they took the shot and it didn't work out, right, Matt?
No, I totally agree with that. My point would be, look at the American League East. Besides Boston, I mean, I really don't see a team that's better than the Yankees. And, you know, Baltimore doesn't have the pitching. Britton is injured. He could be out for quite a while. Tampa Bay isn't going to challenge. Toronto's a mess. So, I mean, the opportunity is there. If they could challenge Boston or at least become a wild card team. So, I mean, if I'm a Yankee fan, I want them to go out there.
You said a couple of things about Baltimore. George, couldn't you say the same things about the Yankees? They don't quite have enough pitching, and their closer is hurt. Is that the same thing as the Orioles are looking at?
Orioles and the Yankees are a very similar team. They're based on power. Yeah. The Yankees probably have better pitching than Baltimore, which is scary because the Yankees starting pitching is really, I mean, Tanaka's having a bad season. Sabathia's terrible. Severino has really declined over his past three starts. I mean, Montgomery is a number five starter. You know, nothing special there. So they have some issues in the starting rotation, the Yankees, which is where their biggest weakness lies. The Yankees are, as we've been sort of hinting at, they're a year or two ahead of schedule right now. So you give this team time to mature and pick up some more players, they'll be fine.
All right. We're back to talk a little bit more about George's closer report after this on the Fantasy Sports Radio Network. Okay, we're back on the Fantasy Sports Radio Network. Hope you enjoyed those ads during the break, because there's a weird one out there, guys. I'm not going to lie. And normally I don't call out
just
our
one?
Ads or anything like that. Yeah, Corey is a skeleton named Jeff.
I like that. I guess you got to get the Jeff.
It's Corey.
But
I got to say, Corey has become some medical expertise. He really has the diagnosis down pat. He called that Robinson Cano injury. We were laughing at him because, as I said, the next day he came back. But prior to that, he was like, Cano's going to need, like, 3 weeks rest and all this. The next day he came back, he had like a 4 for 5 day with a home run. But after that, as we've seen, he went to the DL.
Well, listen, if you make enough predictions, some of them are going to be right. But Wow. I'm just saying, on injuries, like,
no, but he,
Corey's not a doctor.
No, no, but I have to say, he has the medical terms down. He's gotten pretty good at this. I've marveled at it a bit.
So here's what I'll say about the commercial. Then let's say it's Corey. I know a lot about injuries. He's not a skeleton named Jeff. I know it's Corey. Other people know it's Corey. I just found it to be an odd commercial.
But that's what we call Jeff. I mean, that's what we call the skeleton. He has been named Jeff, so.
Is it Jeff because the name of the skeleton on the Late Late Show, where Craig Ferguson did it, was Jeff?
Oh, I have no idea.
Know that?
I was unaware of that.
Craig Ferguson,
that I don't,
the Late
that
Late
I don't
Show.
Know.
I have to say
he
one thing.
He had a skeleton
thing.
Named Jeff.
I have to interject one thing. All this, like, positive Yankee talk is really getting me depressed as a Mets fan, because this was the year we were supposed to be good and you guys weren't.
Be a professional, damn it. Some Mets suck.
They have an ERA over 5, Matt, but they have nowhere to go but up. They are the only team in Major League Baseball with an ERA over 5.
Actually, they wouldn't have anywhere to go but down.
Well, true. It depends how you look at it.
That was kind of like my morning. I walked out of my building, and it rained for about 5 minutes. I got caught in the rain, and, you know, so.
Yeah. When it rains, it pours, right? So, George, want to talk a little bit about closers, since we talked a little bit about the Yankees closure situation. You said this time and time and time again in the preseason. Half of these teams are going to change their closers probably by the All-Star break. And sure enough, we're not even at Memorial Day. And of the 30 teams, 12 teams have made changes at the closure position, some due to injury, some due to lack of success, ineffectiveness. Some teams, as you said, Baltimore, the Mets, Philly, and Washington have made multiple changes. Obviously, injuries are plaguing a couple of those teams with the Mets and the Orioles, but... Down the list we go. Neftali Feliz out as the Brewers' closer. Not a shock at all, right?
No. When I think Corey Niebel is the real deal here, if he's on your waiver wire, he probably is. If you have a weekly waiver wire where it runs on Sunday nights, I'm going out and grabbing him. I think this guy is dynamite. I understand why Milwaukee gave the job to Feliz, because I think it's one of these situations where they knew they weren't going to compete this year. We got a veteran reliever. Put him as a closer. Let's hope he can hold up through June, through July, trading deadline, get some prospects for him to help us with our rebuild. I get it. You know, but I don't think there's any doubt that Corey Knebel is their best reliever. He's lighting it up. Looks great. He's the guy I want there. I picked him up in a league or two, or I put in claims for him in a league or two, because I want this guy. I think he is the real deal there. Only thing I'm worried about is, yeah, I think they will eventually do that fire sale. I don't know how many games they're going to have to save in the second half.
Moving over to the next guy on the list. Matt, how do you feel about Addison Reed taking over for Jeurys Familia?
Well, I mean, look, at least we have Reed here for now. I think, you know, as things keep turning south for the Mets, I'm going to try and remain optimistic. But Reed could be an arm that'll be on the move. And maybe it's Paul, what is it, Sewald, that ends up getting like double-digit saves for the Mets at some point this summer.
So Dylan Betances, obviously, George, he steps in for Aldis Chapman. He has not proven to be the closer that he is, the eighth inning guy in the past. But you feel like he can settle in here now that he's going to have some time to figure this out?
Well, he's only going to be a closer for about another, 3 weeks. Chapman's not out long-term. The MRI came back clean, just inflammation. He should be okay. I wasn't surprised about the Chapman injury. You're a Yankee fan. You've been watching Chapman pitch. He's been off for at least a month now, so not surprised at all there. I guess to Randy Levine's regret, Betances will take over the closer role, because according to Levine, Chapman can't do Betances can't do it, right? He's just a setup guy. What a joke Levine is. Betances should be okay, but to his point, we have seen Betances struggle in the past. I don't think he's available on your waiver wire in too many leagues. We've been touting him up all season long as someone who can get you 8 to 10 saves and protect your ratios. So if he's there, I'm absolutely grabbing him, because you can keep him even when Chapman comes back. But I don't know how available he'll be in your league.
On the real quick on the Levine thing, I texted you guys, I think, the other night, or maybe not. But in any event, I said – it's one of the reasons that you don't say anything, because this guy may very well be your closer. There's many reasons why Randy Levine shouldn't have said what he said, and primary now is the fact that he is, in fact, your closer. I know you said he couldn't close and he didn't close and he hasn't been a closer. Well, he's a closer now. And for your team that's in the middle of a playoff race. So a variety of reasons you shouldn't say anything, and Levine just looks even worse now in retrospect. So moving on to the Giants, and somebody I heard you talking about the other day, Matt, is that Washington may not be looking for that mid-range closer or closer on the rise, including some of those guys that are on their roster, and they may want somebody more established. I heard you and Scott Engel talking about it. But Mark Melancon coming off the DL, came off the DL, and Derek Law owner is going to basically lose his services as a closer. So what are your thoughts about Melancon? Does he stay here? Does he get moved? You think the Giants are actually going to turn the page and have Melancon be a closer somewhere else, despite the fact that they just paid him a ton of money?
Well, that's the tricky part here. If they do move him, they're going to have to eat some of that salary. I mean, they signed him to, didn't he get like a 4-year deal, which that I found a bit interesting. I mean, they do need a guy like that. He was successful in Washington. They can't. I don't think Cody Glover is the answer right now. Maybe in the future he can close games for them and be really good. But he doesn't have the innings, doesn't have the experience. And as I said, I think they need a closer and, let's say, a top-end setup guy. They need more than one arm in that bullpen, because that bullpen has just been god-awful from Blake Tryon, even Sean Kelly, you know, between injuries and ineffectiveness. This is too good of a team that they have to be messing around with this bullpen.
George, Melancon's got $53 million left on this contract. He has an opt-out after next season, but $53 million left over the next 3 years, and he's 32 years of age right now.
All right. First of all, he's never using that opt-out. He's not that good. People are out of their mind. I mean, the Giants overpaid because of what happened last season, where their bullpen imploded in the second half, probably cost them a playoff spot. So the Giants went out, overpaid for a closer who wasn't Chapman, you know, wasn't Miller, wasn't one of the top guys out there, and they overpaid for Melancon, who's a solid closer, but a guy whose stuff is also going down, has been for years. He ends up in the right spot. You want to, if you're going to be a closer, you want to close in San Fran. You know, once again, not, you know, really worried about all that much stuff out in San Fran. Big ballpark, they can get away with some mistakes there. As for Washington, that's a dumpster fire. And this is something we've seen. Washington and Texas, I wrote this in February for the draft kit, shocked that neither team upgraded their closer situation in the offseason. Just shocked. I mean, Washington, I understand, Palabon, that was a disaster. Then you brought in, you traded for Melancon. That worked out fine. I guess I sort of get it if you want to try the youngsters, you know, the Glovers, the Sean Kellys of the world, training, whatever it was. But you're a contending team, and you knew you were going to be a contending team. You should not have let this happen. The good news for Washington is, what do they have, a 10-game lead in the division? So they have time to figure it out. But if they're hoping the price is going to come down, it's only going to get higher, because more teams are going to need a closer as the deadline comes along. So if you're looking for Washington, Herrera, Colon, whoever it might be, that price is going to get higher, not lower. These teams saw what the teams gave the Yankees last year for Miller, what teams gave the Yankees for Chapman. They're going to want a similar price. So I don't know what Washington's thinking here. If they really truly hope that price is going to get lower, it's not. Texas may have gotten lucky where Matt Bush might end up being a guy that was on your roster who stabilizes the position. I think jury's still out on that. Washington doesn't seem to have that player, because I agree about Matt. I think Glover could be your future closer, but I don't think that that future is this season. And if you truly are on a World Series run, which I think they are, do you want to trust your ninth inning in important games in September and October to Cody Glover?
No, I don't think there's any possibility that you could do that. And I think that's why they'll go out and get the established guy. By the way, what George was saying before about the Giants bullpen, they blew 32 saves last year, including the playoffs. It's a staggering number. So it certainly it cost them a lot in any event. I would say that so beyond that, as you said, there's really no answer. As you said in your article, there's really no answer right now in Washington. This is just kind of holding your breath until they make a move. So those are really the highlights of the teams that you're talking about for this week. Anything else out there on the closer report that you feel like is worth highlighting?
Well, as far as the other things, I mean, we saw Brock pitch the seventh inning earlier this week. That's a little strange there. Justin Wilson struggled a little bit with Detroit, but K-Rod is terrible. I'm not worried about him there. Bedrosian is on throwing again. I wonder what's going to happen when he's ready to return. I also wonder how much these injuries that Bedrosian has. He has them over and over again, different injuries. Is just ticking Socher off if he just stays with Norris. We've mentioned Chapman. Some people are worried about, I'm really not. Diaz lost the job in Seattle. He will get it back. He may have it back already. They believe it's just a mechanical adjustment more than anything else. Tony Zitz took the loss last night. At Tampa Bay, Colom, I think he's going to be one of the top trade targets. Already said it, him, Herrera, Robertson, top three closers that are going to be looked to be traded between now and the deadline.
So there you go. Keep that in mind for those of you in all a wide variety of leagues, how those closer situations could change when the players get moved and whether or not they go into a closer role on their new team and who takes over with them on the team that they're leaving. So good stuff, George, there. We'll come back and preview some of today's games on the Roto Experts in the Morning. We'll be back in 2 minutes on the Fantasy Sports Radio Network. Back on the Roto Experts in the Morning. Here for another 20 minutes before we hand it off to Tony Cincata and Cha-Cha for Fantasy Bagels and Baseball. Again, weekend fantasy update after that from 12 to 2, I believe. That is Joe Galina and Frank Stanfield and Mike Florio. We're going to have the Fantasy NASCAR Hour, Father and Son Fantasy NASCAR Hour. That's Scott and Sean Engel a little bit later today. So feel free to go to rotoexperts.com, pick up that in-season fantasy baseball package, enter promo code FREERADIO at checkout for a special discount. You'll get all kinds of good information on there, such as the closer report, which we just reviewed. And also, feel free to download the app, the world's premier 24/7 Fantasy Sports Radio Network app. Take it with you wherever you go. Download the Fantasy Sports Radio app in the iTunes Store on Google Play and listen for free anytime, anywhere. So this show, this live show, typically goes to on demand. You can listen back to any of the content you heard today or any of the shows that occurred earlier this week. So let's take a look around the pitching probables today. We got Ian Kennedy coming back. So he's off the DL and right into the fire here. Ian Kennedy, a guy who, look, you know, I don't know what any kind of expectations are. You're probably in a deeper league if you had him, but he's 0-3 on the season. But, Matt, he steps back in to get his first start off the DL.
I would wait today, you know, his first start back. I do think he has relevance, especially in deeper leagues. In a 12-team league, he's more of a streamer type or a back-of-the-end rotation guy. The strikeouts were a little down to start the season. He does have a 3 ERA, but he's more of a 4 ERA type pitcher. But like I said, he does have a use going forward.
George, Jake Arrieta throws for the Cubs today. He's currently sporting nearly a 5.5 ERA with a .291 opponent's batting average. So you recoiled when I mentioned Jake Arrieta's name in the free agency market a little bit later this year, but really the four wins don't belie exactly what's been going on with him. He's getting hit pretty hard.
Yeah, something's up here. He's not pitching very well at all. Unusual. This is contract year for Jake, and he wants that big deal. He's not going to get the way he's pitching right now. That ERA has got to come way down. He looks more like the pitcher in Baltimore, or he was for Baltimore, than he was for Chicago. I don't know what the problem is. It's a mechanical adjustment. The velocity's gone really far, pretty far down here over the past couple of seasons. So you wonder if is age catching up with him? You know, is that what's going on here? I know it's only 31, not extremely old, but not young for a pitcher either. Maybe it's all the wear and tear here, but I'm not liking what I'm seeing here. Listen, are you starting him? More than likely. I don't know if you can bench Jake Arrieta, but he's not someone who I think is an automatic game in and game out now. I'd be very careful with him.
Moving around the major leagues or today, Drew Pomeranz goes against Sean Manea today. Matt? It's in Oakland. Any thoughts there? You like either of those pitchers today? It's kind of a tough matchup there.
Yeah, it's kind of a tough matchup. My thing with Pomerantz is I'm just waiting for his arm to fall off. I mean, he constantly has bicep tightness and stuff like that. On the flip side with Sean Manea, there's a lot to like, but he still he needs to harness some stuff yet. I mean, 34 strikeouts in 29 innings is great, but 17 walks in 29 innings is terrible. So this is a kid that will be one of the top end pitchers for the A's in the future. Hopefully, maybe at some point this season he can put it all together. Maybe, you know, give you a nice second half run. And for today, you know, I'm not really crazy about either one.
George, Ivan Nova throws today for Pittsburgh. Still, you know, that's just that incredible strikeout to walk ratio continues. 33 Ks and 4 walks on the season. Under a 2.5 ERA, is 3-3 on the season. So Ivan Nova going up against the Phillies today.
Woohoo, it's Ivan Nova Day. Noah's been great. I mean, he really has been great. He struggled a little bit in his last start, but he's someone I'm rolling out there. He's the no doubt of me right now. You want to say it's because of Searidge, the pitching coach for Pittsburgh, or it's because he went to the National League, changed the scenery out of New York, whatever it might be, it's working. And as long as it's working for Nova, it's working for me. He's in my lineup.
Matt Antonio Sensatella, 6-1 on the season. He continues to sort of defy what some people think of him, and he's going up against the Reds today. So, and it's not in Colorado, so that's a positive.
It's a positive, but I mean, this is a guy that he is getting it done, but he's another guy that I think is living a little bit of a charmed life. The K9 rate just over 5. The left on base percentage is 80%. The BABIP is .250. Sooner or later, this is going to catch up to this kid, and this might be the day.
Georgie, you got Tanaka throwing against the Rays today. He's 5-2 on the season, but as you said, he's not been pitching well. So you expect him to possibly get a little bit of a boost today going against the Rays?
Rays beat him up earlier this season in Tampa Bay, right? Opening day. So I don't know if we can guarantee that. Tanaka is another one. Had a fantastic spring. Lights out spring. Has not translated over to the regular season whatsoever. If you have him, you're certainly rolling him out today. It's the Rays. They really are not the greatest hitting team on the planet. They are playing a little bit better.
Strike out a ton.
They do strike out a ton. I mean, there are a lot of free air conditioning there for the Tropicana Field. I'm rolling him out there, but I'm cautiously optimistic. You want to see him turn it around here. Right now he's leaving a lot of balls up in the zone, and those balls are getting hammered, and they'll get hammered by Tampa Bay as well. Cautiously optimistic, but nah, like I say, redraft is an automatic start for me. DFS, I'm staying away.
Speaking of DFS, Matt, you have Matt Scherzer, Max Scherzer going up against the Braves today.
I think you have to pay up without Freddie Freeman in this lineup. The only thing Max does is he does allow a long ball here and there, and the ball does fly out of right center in SunTrust Park. But, I mean, this is like a dream matchup. Colon's looked terrible this season. So, I mean, the win should be there. The strikeout should be there. So, I think today you have to pay up.
One of the Mets' sort of positive stories this season, George, has been Zach Wheeler, who's kind of figuring it out. You know, he's coming back off of major injuries, obviously, but Zach Wheeler's been solid, so he goes up today against the Angels at home in Citi Field.
Is that where we are with the Mets now? Solid makes us happy.
Yes.
Okay.
I mean, opponent batting average .222. You know, he's got 35 Ks in 38 innings. You got to be happy with what Zach Wheeler has done. Yes.
I'm kidding. I was just trying.
I know you're piling on, dude. I'm trying to give Matt something positive.
Well, you know, I don't talk to Scott Engel anymore, so I can't pile it on him. So Matt's taking all that grief. I think Zach Wheeler is a positive. You know, he's someone who I just picked up in one of my leagues, a deeper league too. I was surprised he was out there. Picked up because I think he'll continue to pitch well for the rest of the season here. So yes, I'm on board with Zach Wheeler. And listen, you're starting against the Angels. They have no problem pitching against the Angels. They can't hit either, especially in Citi Field, good pitcher's ballpark there. So yes, I'm on board with Wheeler.
Going back down the list, Jeff Samardzija throws today, Matt. Well, talked about him. So he's a head scratcher. 5.26 ERA. He does. He has been picking up the strikeouts to some extent. 63 strikeouts, but 5.26 ERA. Not great on the season.
Well, I've been using the comp for Samardzija this season as last season's version of Michael Pineda. All the advanced metrics, you know, scream that this guy should be much better. I mean, a 29% strikeout, that's pretty damn good. The FIP is just over 3. The XFIP is one of the best in the leagues at 280. The BABIP is high. It's at 343. He's a 296 career BABIP guy. So if that comes down, he's also got one of the lowest left on base percentages at 59%. So if he goes back to his career average of 70, 71%, there could be a nice correction here for Samardzija. And I know a lot of people don't like him, but he's a guy right now that if he's on a waiver wire in a 12-team league, nobody wants him. I'd be picking him up.
Would you take him over Kevin Gausman, or would you keep Kevin
Gausman? Yes, Kevin Gausman is how bad has Kevin Gausman been? He is on my bench in my AL only league.
Wow, that's
ouch.
That's tough. Yeah, that's says a lot about him. But to your other point, some other numbers from Samardzija. He's right on his career WHIP. He's just about opponent's batting average is slightly higher than normal, but I think you raise a good point. The 1-5 record looks bad, and the ERA looks terrible, but maybe you're looking at a correction here over the course of the next month.
Well, he's got to avoid the blow-up inning. It gets him every start, it seems like.
Yeah. George, A.J. Griffin, 4-0 on the season. He goes up against Justin Verlander today. Pretty good pitching matchup there.
Yeah, it is. Verlander, I mean, it's against Texas-Detroit. I expect this to be like sort of a middle run scoring game, like 4-3, 5-4, somewhere around there. But I'm starting Verlander here. I'll take my chances with him. I'm a little bit worried about Griffin, but are you going to get a better opportunity than today? We know Victor Martinez is out. Mentioned earlier, he's on paternity leave. I believe last night they said Miguel Cabrera could play today, but, you know, he hasn't been all that great this season anyway. So, yeah, I'm gonna roll Griffin out there today. I'm a little worried, as you can see it in my my talk here. I'm a little hesitant here. But you're not going to get a better chance against Detroit. No Victor Martinez. Miguel Cabrera may be hampered at the very best. And just avoid J.D. Martinez. Right now, he's the only guy, him and Justin Upton, only two guys that are really raking the ball on that team.
Yeah, going back to the Giants-Cardinals game for 1 minute, just keep in mind that Samardzija does go up against the Cardinals today in St. Louis against Carlos Martinez. So Matt is talking about more season-long. I don't think it's our favorite DFS option by any stretch of the imagination. His favorite player, though, Kevin Gausman, does throw today against the Blue Jays. Bolsinger goes for the Blue Jays. So still probably on your bench, right, Matt?
Yeah, I'd be wearing a helmet if I'm starting.
We'll be back to finish up the show in a couple of minutes. It's Mike, Matt, and George on the Roto Experts in the Morning Fantasy Sports Radio Network, hour number 2. Back to close out the show. You said Cha-Cha Tony coming up, Fantasy Bagels and Baseball at 10 o'clock. I'm sure they've got some good stuff planned. You'll have to listen in there. If you want to catch us on demand, download the Fantasy Sports Radio app. So been good discussions today about whether or not the Yankees should have kept Andrew Miller, why I still like Don Mattingly, and all that good stuff. You know, as we're going through really the rest of the show, one other player I wanted to mention that's starting today is Urias. You mentioned Julio Urias. George, I think you said earlier you think he's locked in. They're not moving him out of the rotation, despite the fact that the Dodgers currently are about to have a little bit of an excess of starting pitchers. Urias in there, and he goes up against the Marlins today.
He does, in some ways, he is the easiest solution for this. You send him back down, he has options, so no worries there. But I think he's also maybe a top two or three pitcher. I think in the end, the Dodgers know if they don't make any additions, if they really want to go to where they want to go, they're going to need Urias to pitch well because they need him to be dominant. You know, outside of Kershaw, they have a good staff, but nobody really – there's no Zach Greinke there anymore. So there's nobody truly dominant there. I think they're hoping Urias can eventually become that. They'll watch his innings somewhat, which they did earlier this year, but they'll probably keep on doing that. But I think Gary is someone they're going to want to be in that rotation.
Matt, you seem to – I don't know. You think you agree with that, that Urias is the guy that will – that he will stick in there despite the fact that there's some other options out there? Rather, the fact that he has options, do you think that he will stick in there? They won't move him back to the minors.
Yeah, I think now they're committed to him. Like I said, I do believe Alex Wood is the real deal. My only concern is, can he hold up throughout the course of the season? I think Kenta Maeda is a hell of a better pitcher than he looked. People need to also take into consideration that he did pitch in Colorado and in Arizona a couple of starts. So that does skew your thing. That does skew your ERA. And who's the other guy? Rich Hill. I'm a Rich Hill fan. I want to see the guy pitch. The question is, can he? So, to me, McCarthy and Ryu are expendable. They're options that if you have to put them in the bullpen or do whatever you got to do with them, you do that. Those are your better five right there.
So, somebody reacted to the Twitter on Twitter to the discussion regarding Don Mattingly. When I said I still love Don Mattingly, he said, Mattingly cries like a baby when Seager swings 3-0 in a 5-0 game, takes a cheap shot at an opposition coach, and finds a way to lose games. Hashtag nutshell. Not a Don Mattingly fan, George. Guys, Jersey Shore score. So your thoughts on that? Do you think that sums up Don Mattingly?
No, I don't think I said Don Mattingly, but I do think he was wrong yesterday. You know, yeah. I think you know, I thought it was ridiculous. I don't really believe in those things where you stop trying to score, stop trying to hit, just to make outs. You know, so I just swing three times, make sure I don't hit the ball. I don't agree with that at all. I think you always try and score. Maybe the score is 17-0. That might be a little differently. But I want to, you know, listen, if I'm a player, these stats matter. It's how I'm getting paid. It's how everybody judges you. You heard of Randy Levine? Yes, during arbitration. Oh, he screws up when he closes out games. You know, Magic will always bring that up. Oh, he didn't do this. He didn't do that. If you finish with 19 home runs and not 20, they'll bring that up because 20 is a more rounded number. So I'm always trying to hit, always trying to drive the runs.
And by that logic, the pitcher should stop hitting people, putting guys on base, keep their whip down, keep the ERA down, the whole thing. So they're putting themselves at risk as well. Matt, any final words on Don Mattingly and how great he was in the 80s?
No, he was fantastic. I have to say, I really did enjoy watching Don Mattingly, and like I said, probably my favorite Yankee of all time.
All right. Well, I had to close the show on another positive Yankee note. I know it's been a rough season for Mets fans, but I just picked up Zach Wheeler and cut Kevin Gausman. So there you go. That's my positive. That's my contribution to the Mets trying to turn it around. My positivity will help Zach Wheeler today, and they'll start a huge winning streak. We're done for today. George and I will be back tomorrow. Thanks to Matt Modica. Thanks to our producer, Pete Considori. We'll be back tomorrow. Listen to Fantasy Bagels and Baseball next on the Fantasy Sports Radio Network. We're out.